It's the Help Show. Yes, we're back. 2 weeks break. We've had loads of questions. Thank you very much for everyone who sent a question in. If you've got a question for us, it's the Help Show. No, it's not. It's BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com. I'd start again, but I really just don't care. There we go. Joining me to answer your questions. These are all your questions, by the way. I've got Paul Wheatley, who's our web man and developer-ish man, developer layouty type man and gamer man and stuff. We've got Paul Shadwell, who's a jack of all trades, but definitely someone who's into the corporate tech support element. Sarah Dambilla, who does our Linux and web. And then we got Wrighty, who solves the problems of an entire frigging university. So I expect great things from him this evening. Kicking us off then to get going straight away, we've had a question from Phil Birch. Hi, Ewan and the team. My daughter, who is 5, has an iPad which she likes to take to bed at a weekend to watch Barbie on Netflix. Well, you soon get that out of her. Don't worry, mate. Is there any way of turning the iPad off by time or via stopping the internet to that device? My router is an Apple Airport Express. Thanks in advance, Phil Birch. I don't think there's any time, because of course in OS 10 you can got parental controls which will let you set the time that it comes on and the duration that they can use for a total in a day without logging off and logging back in again. I know there's parental controls on the iPad, but I don't think there's any timings like there is on OS 10, is there?
I've actually come across something before, and I'm trying to remember what it's called.
Sarah's answered an iPad question. Holy hell!
No. The reason being is because you do this through the router. Where you set, it's like you do with corporate networks, where you have a way of configuring who can do what where and where. You know, like in corporate world, very often they block Facebook, so all social media type thing. And there's a way, I've seen a way of doing this where you can specify by device the times that they can access the internet, and you can switch off the internet access by device. But I can't remember off the top of my head.
And I actually was doing this weekend.
Oh!
I think it's also the same interface with the Express. But if you go into the settings, if you edit the airport device, under the network button, there's something called timed access control. And if you enable that, you can go in and specifically the device that she has. So you'll need to know the MAC address of her iPad, which you can look up under the general info in the iPad itself. And then you create or you add a wireless client and with the MAC address, and then you can set the times of day that you want it. So, for example, my stepson, I've done, so weekdays, it's between 5 and 7 in the evening. And weekends 9 until 7.
Can you set a duration within that, Paul, or is that just an access period?
It's the period. You set the period.
Just a window. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can't set
a
specific.
You can do it by day, weekdays, every day, weekends.
Because in OS 10, you can set the time period. So you can say, right, the computer can't come on before 6 a.m. and it has to go off before 8 p.m. But then within that, you can say they're allowed an hour and a half within that time band.
Yeah. All right. I mean, there are ways of setting, you can restrict access to certain things within the iPad itself, within iOS.
Yeah, websites and so on.
It's nothing for times.
Right.
If you want to kind of be a bit extreme, and I'm not sure actually how this would work with an airport, but you can get open source router software, which allows for quite a high level of configurability. And so that kind of thing where you can say, I want an hour and a half. But it's not for the faint of heart. It's going to involve quite a bit of getting your hands dirty in code and potentially going wrong and having to worry about firmware upgrades and things like that. So it's not for the faint of heart, but it's definitely something you could consider.
Paul Wheatley there, who cannot wait to move.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. A month and a week. Month and a week.
Do it.
Sounding like he's on the telephone.
Yeah, righty. What do you have to say?
There is an app for iOS that will do it.
Oh.
Parental time lock. It's called Parental Time Lock. Time limit for children. It's £1.49 in the App Store for iOS 6 and 7, and you can set timers which can reset daily. It'll actually give your children a 10-second countdown timer, telling them when the device is going to turn off in the chat room. But yeah, it's an app that kind of does it. So if you don't want to be playing around with routers and all that sort of business. There you go.
And there's in-app purchases for the kids to get around all of your controls.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, it's got 3 5-star reviews. There you go. Probably his family. But, you know, there is something out there that, you know, they're playing around with routers that you could do.
There you
that
go,
sounds
Phil.
Like the easiest option, actually.
It sounds yeah. does. Fantastic.
What's it called again?
It's called a parental time lock, time limit for children. Catchy.
I can't understand how that works. How does that work? Because apps are sandboxed and don't have control of how the iPad can switch off.
Oh, that's a good point.
Good point.
Someone's got to download it and have a play.
Yeah.
Someone in the chat room, you need to. Someone in the chat room, I'll send you the £1.49 via PayPal. Someone download it now and tell us whether you can do it or not and whether it works. I guess it's going to work, otherwise, it's not going to be in there and it's got to be legit. But it's interesting to get Paul's answer answered in retort, if you like, response, because that does sound like a logical thought, Paul, you have to say.
Yeah, I can't understand how that works. Because the only other, I don't know.
I'm going to download Maybe it now and try.
Good man. I'll send you the £1.49, mate. Next question. Dear Help Show, thanks for a great show this week. Good panel and nice tip about resetting the iOS app in iOS 7. I think it was Bart's, wasn't it? How do I get my own album artwork into iTunes? I want to add text and pictures and have them show up in iTunes on my MacBook Pro, iPad, etc. I have the latest iTunes. Do I need to use any special software? If so, what can you recommend? Thanks for any help you can give me. Sent from Owen in Japan.
So the when he says my own artwork, is that meaning he wants to, like, so for example, take a photograph of his kids and add it to like their fifth birthday party, or is that some of his art, like some of the CDs he's perhaps ripped, hasn't got the artwork on it? Do you think? Because it's slightly different, but well, so
well,
one
let's,
way one
let's
way,
take the higher
one
path.
Way works both. Sorry.
Let's take the higher path.
The higher path.
Yeah, and suggest.
And then he's wanting to add artwork to his home videos.
He wants his own custom artwork for his for his videos and for his music.
Okay. Well, that's really simple. You essentially, when you're in iTunes, you right click on where you want to put your artwork onto. Go to Get Info, and then in there you get a whole bunch of tabs relating to the metadata around that. And I think it's like the second last or the last tab is called artwork.
It's the last, yeah.
And you just hit the add button, or is it browse? It's certainly a clear interface for adding graphics in there. And it just gives you an interface that allows you to pick up an image from somewhere else on your computer. Yeah. That, and then just click OK, and then it updates the metadata there. And to be fair, that also works if you've perhaps ripped a CD or something like that. But there is other tools out there that allow you to do that on mass instead of having to go into a separate one. But if it's whole movies and things like that, then... It's quite simple. Right click, get info, artwork, upload.
The thing that's really nice and simple about iTunes with that is it's drag and drop into that box anyway. You don't have to understand anything about how to do it. You just pick the image up, drop it in there, JPEG or PNG, and that it'll just work. It'll just change it. As soon as you click OK, it'll appear in iTunes. Watch out, because it does lose it occasionally, and I don't know why. I've got one over there, and there's 5 movies that regularly just lose their artwork, and all you have to do is open it, and it's there. It's still showing, and then when you click OK, it just appears again. No idea.
Yeah. One writer in the chat room is also recommending an app called TuneUp, which I assume is for this sort of the other alternative. I've never used this one, and I have to throw a flag of caution. I'm assuming because WindRider's used it, it's probably very good. But I have used these before, and quite often I've had sort of less mainstream albums and things like that with complete nonsense information thrown up, and it's replaced song titles.
Yeah.
Because with other song titles, they aren't actually, and it's completely screwed up my iTunes library. I think whenever you use something like TuneUp, I would highly recommend a backup of your iTunes library before you set something loose on the entire library. But
you are changing the hard file, aren't you? So that's the thing to remember. Yeah, you will make an intervention on the current file, definitely.
Exactly.
The other thing I was going to say was, if you're doing movies, the best thing to do is to go on Google Images and type in the name of the movie and then movie poster after it, and you'll get the movie poster that you use in the theatres, and you can get some really cool stuff that's completely different from the DVD case or the CD, you know, the Blu-ray case, and drag those in, and they're really cool. All of my movies on the server have all got the movie poster for that movie, and there's some really cool ones. I've got some ones in Japanese that weren't released anywhere else and things like that, so you can get really
all the movies you've made yourself, because you wouldn't have content on your hard drive of their publicly available movies.
Well, no, but you can take, even if you buy stuff out of the Apple store, you can still change the cover art on it.
Of course, that's a good point. Of course, that's what you meant. Of course.
And the other, go on.
There's also an open source option.
Go on.
Which are Music Brains Picard.
Okay.
Which is basically kind of like TuneUp, but it's free, but it works across Windows, Mac, and Linux. That is free. It does the same thing, and that goes to Amazon and gets all the artwork and all those sort of things. So I've used that in the past. That actually works really well.
You got Cover Scout as well, which is an old one, but that's pretty expensive for what it does. Mm. No. Mm. And don't forget as well, if you want to make your own album artwork, all you got to do is make a 1600 by 1600 pixel square, because all album artwork's square. And again, just drag that in. You can do whatever you want. You can use GIMP. We talked about that the other week as an alternative to Photoshop, or use Photoshop or Photoshop Elements. Make a 1600 by 1600 pixel blank canvas and type and write and image whatever you want on there. That's all. Paul, Chads, you had something to say there. I cut you off, sorry.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say in iTunes, you can actually drag and drop the artwork into the metadata.
Yeah, it's just a box. Feel free. Away you go. I hope that helped. Owen in Japan. Japan's cool. Thanks, mate. That's the furthest we've had, I think. Jason, excuse me, via the community. Anyone on the panel used Western Digital MyCloud storage and system, and is it any good? I've got Western Digital drives, but I've never trusted any on-cloud system, so I'm not the one to start us off here.
That's the built-in one, is it? Either.
Yeah, he's specifically saying Western Digital MyCloud. Anyone in the chat room use Western Digital MyCloud?
We've got a wee bit of a delay in the chat room, I think.
Yeah, we've got a four-minute delay, so we'll come back to that question.
Because that's just an inbuilt one that... Because they used to use a different technology in their older drives. I don't know what they actually use now. But I guess you go to the Western Digital website. It can't be any different to kind of Transporter or anything like that, really, because you really... Yeah. And Plex does the same thing with MyPlex for all your media. So I think as long as you've got an account that's doing port forwarding on your router, it's probably as good as anything out there, really.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, the single point of failure is your Western Digital drive.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's doing the work. So as long as you've got the port forwarding and everything sorted out, then, you know, as long as you can access it, they've probably got, I don't know if they've got apps for iPhones and Android and things. I could probably check, but probably they've got all that kind of support, because cloud services are pretty useless without the kind of mobile support. So if they've got that sort of thing and you can just access them pretty seamlessly, then there's no reason why it wouldn't be any good. I haven't tried it personally. I can't give an opinion, but it can't be anything worse than anything out there.
So
Western Digital are pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I like Western Digital. All of my, I've got a 6 terabyte Thunderbolt down here, and I've got 4 3 terabytes over there behind that screen that do the double backups of them all. And I've got another 2 that are up at my parents' house that I swap over with them. So, but the thing I would say, Jason, is please go ahead, buy them, and review them for us.
It's definitely an iOS app. I can see it. It's a free app, so they've got the mobile support. It's got good reviews, so looks like it's pretty good.
Let me know, and I might chance it, but I'm not into cloud. Next one's from Ian. Not so much a problem as intrigue as to why, after you and recently recommended Hitman on the Mac show, I thought I'd take a look. However, my late 2011 MacBook Pro has a 512 megabyte Intel HD 3000 card, and this is one of the cards listed as not supported. I've noticed this on previous titles, such as F1 2012, and it's just the Intel cards that aren't supported. There must be many folk out there affected by this. I just wondered what the technical reasons were, although my MacBook Pro is a couple of years old. I know from playing Call of Duty 4, it's very capable, and I've done that. I've got Call of Duty 4 as well. Or maybe these titles will still run at my own risk. Anyone have experience of running them on the unsupported cards? Well, I've got a 2011 MacBook Pro, and it runs it.
Right, so, okay. Is it not with some of these things that it's just maybe you're not going to get, you know, the cream of the graphics and things like that? I have to admit, with me, when I download games from my Mac or buy games from my Mac, I rarely look at the supported hardware thing. I just kind of fire on, and I've never had, touch wood, I have never ever had an issue.
I've never checked either.
So far.
I've got a Hackintosh here that runs it absolutely beautifully.
I guess, Paul, this is one of the benefits of having Mac, is that because of the fact that Mac handle all the hardware, you can be pretty sure it's going to work.
Yeah. Shads, you were going to say something?
No.
Was it? All right, it was right then.
It was me. No, no. Obviously, I don't do any gaming on a Mac, and I do it on a PC, and obviously you can do the kind of hardware checks to see kind of what sort of performance you're going to get. Do you get that on Mac versions of things where you can kind of do a scan of the hardware and see what you can get out of it, and it kind of optimizes the game to kind of, you know, the best resolution and thing for your hardware? Do Mac versions do that?
I'm guessing that's not going to help, though, because that's just going to come out with a basic speed or bench test, isn't it? Whereas what Paul's talking about is the way in which it draws the triangles and the numbers that it can draw at a single instance. And that's not just hardware-based, it's the way it physically does it. I'd go so far as to say, is that OpenGL and the format of OpenGL that it uses that would cause that? I'm not answering that. I'm not saying I know that, but
I don't know. It's maybe something if they don't want to take a big leap and spend, you know, best part of £40 on some of these games, is maybe find a game that's like under a tenner that lists that card as unsupported and see what happens, and take a bit of a punt on it for like £5-10. And if it works, then I think you could be relatively confident that it might and be okay for some of the more expensive games. I don't know.
Well, Apple are pretty good, though. I bought Arkham Asylum, and there was something wrong. It just
what a game!
It wouldn't run on my Mac. And Apple, I wrote to Apple and said, "Look, this is I've got a 2011 MacBook Pro. It's supposed to run on this. It doesn't. What can I do?" And they just gave me an instant refund. And the thing is, as well, the game actually still appears in my purchases, and I haven't downloaded it, but I could download it and run it on the Hackintosh if I really wanted to, or the old Mac Pro. I mean, it's, they don't take it off you, but they give you a refund for it. Same with, I had a movie that was out of lip sync, Wolf of Wall Street, the other week, and I wrote to them and said, lip sync's out. And they said, okay, full refund, but I can still watch the movie, still there in my file. So,
wow.
That's cool.
They're really good about that kind of stuff. As long as you don't take the piss and you're not writing every week to try and get your money back. I actually got a full refund on Cloud Atlas, and just for I said, this is the shittiest film I've ever seen in my entire life.
And you got a refund for that?
I got a refund. I said, I the Wachowski was a living off the reputation, and I've got to say, I get everything. I understand what's going on. It's not that. This is just a shit film. And
I actually enjoy that movie.
That's bollocks.
But you got a refund?
I got a full refund, yeah. And I can still watch it,
just because you thought it was rubbish.
Yeah, but
it's pretty awesome, isn't it?
I wouldn't take the celluloid it was printed on and wipe my ass with it though.
Okay, say what you think, Ewan.
I would say, Ian, you should be able to pay that. I would buy it, and if you buy it and you can't run it, come to the bash. I'll give you £20. There we go. I might not.
Yeah. Okay. Before we go on, I have the answer for this parental time app.
Oh, go on.
Okay, so I downloaded it. I set it up, and I told it to lock me out at 9 o'clock. It's now my time. It's now 9:30, and I waited. I thought, "Well, how's this? Because I'm still able to use it." And then it popped up and says, "Please turn off your device now. You're past your time limit."
Oh, is it a warning then? Not a.
All right. 1:49.
You just dismiss it, and then you can carry on what you were doing.
Oh, that's
not quite the same thing, is it?
No.
Ellis is close to being able to outthink me on a computer now, so, I mean, that's never going to work. Jesus. Next question. We're having a chat.
You want to get your £1.50 back on that?
I should, yeah. I will go and write to it.
Question from Ian Montgomery. We were talking about this before we started, actually. Recently purchased a Raspberry Pi to run as a Minecraft server, but now I've received it, I've got no idea where to start. Can anyone help? Sarah, you started this thread off.
I did.
Go on.
I did, and I cannot believe that I'm actually answering a question about a gaming question.
Well, we've got
a definite first.
Well, we got Paul as a safety net as well, don't forget. Okay. So answer with gay abandon.
Three pauses, I say.
The reason why I jumped into this one was because Raspberry Pi Essence runs Linux, and particularly the best flavour of that comes on it is a flavour of Debian called Raspbian. So my first thought was, okay, let's see if there's a Linux version of Minecraft server, and indeed there is. It's a Java version. It appears to have been done. There's obviously quite a few people that are trying to do exactly this, but the best thing I can suggest is if you go to raspberrypi.org/minecraft-server. And it will give you information on what people have done and how it's been done. But yes, it has been done. So I'd imagine the best place there would be to go there and actually see what people have got to say. And I'm sure you'll find some instructions, detailed instructions on how to do it.
So just to flop out my ignorance here, I thought that all Minecraft servers were Java-based anyway. So why is this causing an issue specifically with Raspberry Pi then?
Well, my concern was, and I think a lot of people would be, was whether the Raspberry Pi would have enough meat to be able to run the Minecraft server. But it, you know, because it is a fair, I don't want to knock Raspberry Pi, but it's meant to be a concept computer, and the idea is it use it for experimenting and things like that. And you can use it. I mean, I've used it as a DNS server, so you can use it for some things. But I wasn't sure, because I'm not that familiar with Minecraft, what the capabilities of it were in terms of whether it would be able to handle it. But it seems
only
that
one user, right?
Well, I don't, if it's running as a server, then I would imagine that
you should get more. It's,
you know, you're not actually using it as the serving up the graphics. It's just actually handling the traffic going backwards and forwards. This is what you'd expect. So I might be completely wrong here, but because obviously I'm not familiar with Minecraft, but if it's the fact that it's called a server, I'd imagine it's actually handling requests to and from Minecraft users. So you're not handling the actual processing of Minecraft. It's actually just doing that part. And if that's the case, then it's quite possible that it would actually be able to do it.
Wheaters, leap to the lady's gallant aid.
Yes, that's completely right.
Hey! Sarah.
I don't really know what else to add. That's a
gold
answer.
Star for Sarah answering a Minecraft question. You must feel pretty good right now, woman.
That's got to be a first. And
she's on an iPad question. Where's Sarah Gray? What have you done with her?
I'll see if I can find her.
Wheaters, what do you say, mate?
So the only thing I'd add to that is there's a slightly different thing you have to do, and to be fair, you have to do this irrelevant of what platform you run your server on, but there's a potentially some port forwarding you have to think about if you want to open that server out to the public, or even if you want to open that server out to friends who don't happen to live in your house or on your router or something like that. Yeah. So you have to do a little bit of jiggery-pokery there. But I think the link that Sarah mentioned there, raspberrypi.org/Minecraft-server, has all that information there, or has links off to find all that information there. It's the game itself is fairly low power in terms of what the server wants, but it does expect quite a bit. I wouldn't expect you to have much more than a few players on this server. But
I've never done it, so I can't
say definite, but I know certainly the Minecraft server that I run in my house, which is a 2010 Mac Mini, and it starts to just show a little bit of creakage when you have kind of four or five people on it. You know, when my daughter's got friends around and she's got kind of four or five people connected to it, it starts to creak a little bit. So I'd imagine a Raspberry Pi would probably do that at the same time, if not sooner.
I assume that what we're talking about, what Ian's looking to do here, is to be able to run the Raspberry Pi on a network internally, not necessarily put it externally. Is that what most people do, or is would you like to
sort of 50-50.
Have remote people, users? Joining you as well.
So there's sort of three different levels you can have. You can have the internal one, which is as you would expect, it's just an internal connection to your network. But then you can also have a public one, which just people can access and come along. I wouldn't expect this to do that, because to be honest, it'll probably cave under pressure very, very quickly. I would expect more likely Ian's planning to kind of have it internally for, you know, him and his flatmates or his kids or whatever to all kind of play together on. Or perhaps like his friends to kind of connect to externally, but yeah, you can do all three.
Yeah, so you need to put it, if you want to put it public, you need to put it in the DMZ.
I guess so. I've never actually went into that level of it before.
Excellent.
Okay.
Fine answer. Well done. We've had a suggestion for show title: Sarah's Gold Star, or Gold Star for Sister Sarah. Next one's from Kathy in Belfast. Dear Help Show, I'm an amateur photographer and I want to put some of my photographs online to share with my family and friends. I don't want to put a password on the page or anything that makes it harder for my friends to see the photos, but I don't want people to steal my photos. Are there any services you could recommend that allow me to share a URL and only folks who have the URL to see my photos Kathy. I've got to say, my first thought on this one is probably if you've got a select group of friends who are just your friends, then actually Facebook would probably do quite a good deal on this. Because if you're limiting your account, don't put your account out to all and sundry. Make sure you've got friend acceptances. And if those friends are the ones that you want to see the pictures and no one else, then Facebook would probably do a really good deal of this. I think that Tumblr and Flickr also do private folders that you can share with specified other users, but they've got to be users of Flickr. It's not just a state, no, here's the URL, is it?
I use Flickr, and you can set an image or a album to be private so that you can't search for it, but you can give out the URL to that to that image or album, and those people can see that, but they won't see anything else, only that album or picture.
Yeah, I had a hunt around as well, and I found Drop Photo, which removes things from Google image searches and stuff like that for you, but it's password protected, that's the only thing. So which didn't
yeah I was similar to what just said about with I can't remember what it was said, but I was thinking with Flickr, I was thinking that Dropbox, it's a bit of a pain to do it for groups of photos, but you could do it for individual photos. You can put them in the Dropbox, and then it will allow you to, it will create a unique URL for you, and you could publish those URLs. But if you've got a lot of photos, that's probably going to be a bit of a pain to do it that way.
But you could share a folder in Dropbox.
Yeah, but I don't know how
a user account for that, don't you?
No. I don't think you do.
You don't
have to
share the URL.
I wouldn't necessarily be sure about the sharing the folder. I suppose it might work, but it's a little bit messy.
So
Flickr sounds like the better option.
Just let me come back to the goal, because I've got a question there. So you're saying I can share a folder in Dropbox with someone who's not a Dropbox user, and the whole folder will be visible through a URL only, because I always thought they had to have a Dropbox account.
No, I think you can share a folder with a URL.
A public,
no, I've done it with individual images, and they're fine. You can
publish. I know you can do a single share on a single file, but I didn't think you could share a folder. Okay, well, thank you. Yeah. I've learned something.
Well, now that you're saying that, I'm starting to think twice about that answer.
Right. Okay.
Can you share a whole folder? Actually, that's a good point.
I think you can share. I know you can do a right click and share link, and just paste a single link into an email, and then they'll download it or look at it online. But I didn't think you could do a folder. But Paul's obviously, because he's not looking, he's just answering now at the bottom. So he's obviously trying this. So
I was just going to hear as well.
Right.
I'll leave it to Paul.
Okay.
Which Paul?
You lazy woman. Who cares? The thing is as well, you three aren't content with having the same bloody name. You all want to sound very similar when you go yes or mm.
Well, I'll go Norfolk for you, then you know it's me.
What we want is a university challenge buzzer for you three, if you want to come in.
Well, you know, muffled, so you know it's him.
Ewan, do you think you and me should change our names to Paul?
Yeah, absolutely, Paul. No question.
Then we can call it the Paul Show, couldn't we? Rather the Paul than the Help Show.
Yeah.
Anyway, which Paul are we after?
Well, Shads was the one that was ignoring everyone and sitting looking at his computer, so I figured he was trying it. Otherwise, yes, that is just being bloody rude.
Well, anyway, there's two ways I can think of. One which is perfect, which is might not be perfect for everyone. Can you do it with private share with Google Hangouts, Google Plus Circles?
They've got to be a Google Plus user then, though.
Yeah, but the only other one that I can think of, which is absolutely perfect, because I know I use it, is Office 365 does do it. And you can do it by email address. And they haven't got to be an Office 365 users to do it. And you can share entire folders. But obviously, you are looking at having a subscription.
Okay, spot on. Bronwyn in the chat room is saying definitely that you can share a folder with non-users. And Windrider's posted a link, which is from Dropbox, which I'm presumably is sounding that out. So, yeah. Okay. I was wrong. I just thought. I didn't know I was right. I didn't know I was wrong. Next one is... I recently purchased an Airport Extreme from Amazon to replace a router that had been fried in a lightning strike. It arrived and worked perfectly until I tried to use it with some non-Apple hardware and some old Apple hardware, specifically a Sony Bravia TV, 10 months old, a Wii U and a Sky HD box, and an iPhone 4. They can't see the network. It's like it's just not there. However, everything else sees it fine. Furthermore, I've had it for 3 weeks now, and the range on the Airport Extreme gets pitiful, but it was awesome. Any thoughts? Paul Wheatley.
well, if he doesn't know, Jesus.
So
we can put our own. No one says we can't put our own questions in.
I'd just like to take this moment to say that I've actually gotten to the bottom of this, but I put it in here because it was actually, I had a lot of fun and I learned a huge amount trying to get to the bottom of this problem.
Project.
So that would be interesting to kind of discuss it. And I also would like to just thank Mark Shepherd and Paul Shadwell for their help over Twitter trying to get this sorted out. I've come at the conclusion, essentially, I've got a dodgy airport extreme.
That's oh, really?
Basically where I've got to. And I've gotten a replacement one, which should be arriving tomorrow.
Benefits of Amazon.
Sorry?
Benefits of Amazon.
Yeah, the huge benefits of Amazon. But basically what it seems to be is that the 2.4 gigahertz antenna just doesn't exist, or it's not working or something like that. So all a whole bunch of tools. I tried many, many tools trying to test all sorts of things. It just wasn't sending anything at 2.4 gigahertz. So even when I split the networks out, because there's the facility for two, have a dedicated 5 gigahertz network and a dedicated 2.4 one. Even when I enabled that, because by default it should be sending out in 2, if I believe that's correct, Paul, other Paul Shadwell. When I split them out, it's still any tool that I used to detect available networks was only seeing the 5 gigahertz one. And it kind of ties in because it basically newer hardware that was working. And it was older hardware, with the exception of my TV, which I thought was a bit odd, that wasn't working. But I'm assuming just Sony Bravia just used 2.4 gigahertz receivers. But yeah, I got to the bottom of it, but it was a really interesting journey finding that out.
Excellent. Hmm. Okay. Does that answer the question, though? Does that answer Paul's question?
My question. it does. I mean,
it does.
Yeah. Because it should just be easy. And I think that was kind of exasperating. I could tell, even though it was just in text messages and things like that over Twitter, that Shadwell was getting a little bit exasperated by my questioning.
Well, I did follow some of that because I follow all three of you. I saw everything on Twitter. It didn't get rid of it. So, bit of spam.
Yeah, it was probably fairly extreme for people for a couple of hours.
Never mind. Well done, mate. Glad you sorted. Until the new one arrives, anyway.
Dear
Help Show, Savannah in Wick. I know Wick. I used to fly to Wick to go to Thurso, to Dounreay nuclear power plant. I always put screen protectors on my phones, but never managed to fit them correctly. Can you recommend a service that fits screen protectors? Not a bloody Wick, I wouldn't have thought. Or are there any tricks to fitting them without leaving bubbles behind? Savannah Turnbull in Wick.
If you buy them in an Apple store, they fit them for you, don't they?
Do they?
Obviously, I believe they do.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Do they clean your shoes as well? Superb.
Sure, if you ask.
Sorry?
I was going to say a cup of water with one drop of washing up liquid in it and apply it lightly to the screen, and then it should go on and you should be able to move it ever so slightly and then squeegee it off, and in the morning it'll be a completely knackered iPhone.
Yeah. We don't endorse that, do we?
No, as long as you don't go stupid with the water, woman. I mean, that's anything.
I always thought this is about technique.
No, it's technique be damned, because you get one speck of dust in it, and it's a piece of dust you can't even see until it goes on a black surface. And I have this as well with cleaning lenses, because you'll take your UV filter off and you'll clean your UV filter when you're out on site with a clean rag and then screw it back on, and there'll be one speck of dust that you were like every angle you could possibly find to see it. And it's you don't see it until you screw it back on the black background of the full lens itself. So it's a pain in the ass.
I know this problem all too well, because back in my hot rodding and custom car days, I used to apply the dark material that you can put on your windscreen, not on your windscreen, but on the side windows and at the back. And you would tinting. Use a spray bottle of washing up liquid and water. Put that on, put it onto the film, and then apply it. But the worst ones, the old cars where they had the heated rear windscreen elements on the surface of the glass, that was a pain.
So I the other alternatives to this, because I hate this, and I stopped putting screen protectors on my phones just because it was a pain in the arse, and I came across screen guards, which I was blown away with how easy they were to put on. really, really easy because they're actually glass. They're not plastic.
So there's no rolling them up.
Because they're not plastic, you don't. You can easily squeegee them over the top, and it gets rid of all bumps. And when I used to put on like the plastic ones and things like that, I'd spend ages sort of perfectly like laying it out and just making sure it was right, and you know, slowly placing it on top of the screen, and then inevitably there's three or four bits of gravel underneath it. But with the screen guards thing, you give it a quick wipe and you just smack it on top, and it is superb. I'm really blown away with it. And I don't think I will ever have a phone without a screen guard protector from here on in until such times as the screens are actually don't need any protection.
I was going to play my trump card right at the very end, which is screen protectors are absolute bollocks. Because you've got Gorilla Glass 2 if you're on an iPhone 5S, which is very, very resilient. You've got to physically drop the thing, and a screen guard, the amount you'd have to drop it, a screen protector is not going to help it. It's not going to scratch easily. And the others, on my Nokia 1020, I've got Gorilla Glass 3, and there are two people here on the panel who can attest that it survived a face-down drop from 5 feet from the dozy drunk bitch that tried to take pictures of us in San Francisco. Kind as she was to offer to do it. I would have preferred not to be quite so inebriated. But, I mean, there's a group of 20 techies all waiting for this woman to take a picture, and she drops it face down on the concrete, and there's an instant, ooh, from 20 people all at once.
All thinking the same.
And I run over, and I come back and go, Gorilla Glass 3, and I'm giving them all the V sign. So
what we wanted to do is go, yay, because it's a Windows phone.
Because it's a Windows phone. But if you've got Gorilla Glass 2 and 3, you're probably not going to get scratches on it. You're going to have to hit it with something pretty significant.
I disagree, and it's mainly because my wife just throws her phone into her bag. There's no screen protector on it or anything, and it is scratched to holy hell.
I can't,
and it's a 5S. And it's her own fault, I get that. And she chooses to do that. And she's kind of okay with it, but I'm not okay with her damaging a pretty iPhone.
What you want is the iPod socks.
Sorry?
You want the iPod socks?
No, she doesn't like, same as me, I don't like putting a case on my phone or putting in anything. I have it in my pocket and that's it. And so that's the other reason that I don't like the kind of the plastic ones, because inevitably when you put it in your pocket, the corners start to peel away, and then when I'm sitting bored in meetings, I start peeling it further, and then eventually it just looks horrendous, so I peel it off.
It's your form of doodling, isn't it, Paul?
I do that as well. but this screen guard's absolutely superb. I am really, really chuffed with the screen guards. Good. I got it for free because it was in our speakers bag at Macworld, and I probably would have never picked one up otherwise.
I've just given that away.
Really, really chuffed. Sorry?
I've just given that away. Ian Ross. Yes. Ian Ross sent me a picture. I'll put it up on the Mac Show this week. But yeah, Ian Ross sent me a picture of him with all of his swag laid out. Yeah. Well, no, I finally sent it to him. He claimed it fairly quickly, but I sat on it for a month because I was just shooting around everywhere and I never got a chance to post it. And I did suffer trying to find a box that the damn bag would fit in. I ended up having to crush a box, and it almost looked exactly the same shape when I posted it. So there we go. Next question. Dear Help Show, please help me. I can't use my Xbox Live. There is a new legal thing I need to accept when I try to log into Xbox, but every time I try to accept it, it times out and tells me I can't use Xbox Live without accepting it. So I say okay and try again. It times out. I'm stuck in this loop and I can't seem to break it. My internet is fine. I've got 70 megabits down and 10 up. All the other devices are working fine on the network. I haven't used my Xbox for months, but just bought Titanfall for the sole purpose of playing online, and I can't do it. Help me, help me, help me, team. You're my only hope. That's Peter Coburn in East Midlands.
So,
okay, I have an Xbox Live account, if that helps.
Well, you're just going to hack your account, and that'll be done. That's the kind of dedication.
I had a similar problem in that I couldn't get to this particular to accept this legal
terms and conditions.
Exactly. So what I did was I logged into my Xbox account online using my computer, and then I was able to accept it there.
Yeah, so I looked up I just did a bit of googling, and it seems to be that's the way to solve this, is you have to go on to xbox.com, log into your account and do it there.
It's pretty crap, isn't it?
That's shit, that's
there didn't seem to be any explanation from anything I could find. There was no explanation as to what was actually causing this, but enough people have done it that it was fairly sure that this was the solution to it.
Yeah, but that's pretty crap that Microsoft would put something like in that and then make it really difficult for people to do it, but make it mandatory. That's awful. Yeah. Really is bad.
Not good. Not good. Okay. Well, there you go, Pete. Hopefully that helped. Glad we got you back on for Titanfall.
There's a funny one. It seems to just be a funny thing with, it must be something to do with Microsoft's live servers. I'm assuming this happened in the last kind of couple of weeks or something like that. But I was trying to get into Grand Theft Auto 5 online two nights ago, and it just came up and told me that I needed to download new updates to play Grand Theft Auto online. And every time I went through the process of going, yep, I want to download that. Yes, I do. Are you sure? Yes, I am. Wait. There's been a temporary error. And it just kept doing that. And I rebooted my Xbox, rebooted my router and everything like that. I just think it seems to be something to do with Xbox Live servers. It's bizarre. But unfortunately, you can't go and bypass that by logging into your account online. But it's a pain.
Yes. Good one. Next question. Dear Help Show, I'm considering using a music streaming service, but there are so many to choose from these days. iTunes Radio, Spotify, Pandora, and now Beats has launched one with Apple. Was interested in what the cream of geekery uses. And would rate them, what you would rate highly. Also, do you use the free versions or do you pay for them? Gordon Halliday, Austin, Texas. I got an interesting question as well from Jim Ormiston, who sends me loads of stories for the Mac Show. And he was saying that he tried to sign up for iTunes Match the other day and he got kicked out. They're not taking new users at the moment.
Oh.
Which I don't know if anyone's had that same issue, but that was about a week ago, 6 days, 7 days ago. So. Interesting.
Anyway, just clarify one thing in that question before we actually answer the question. Beats didn't launch a music service. Now that they've joined Apple, the Beats music service has been around for a while. There.
Okay. Right, any answers? What do you use, Sarah? You started off.
I just put a comment in there about, in addition to music streaming services, also worth looking at radio tuning streaming services like TFS Radio, which offer lots of options. I tend to use that. The only one that I really use is Spotify, mainly because it's so good and I've never had any reason to look at anything else. I do use Amazon connected with their download service, but I have got Amazon Music, although I'm not sure yet whether it's available in the UK, so I don't know what that's like, if anyone who has used it. But to be honest, I've never had any problems with Spotify, so I would always use that.
Okay. Righty?
Well, I've got a bit of a story.
If you'll
indulge me, because I've tried to solve this problem myself. I didn't really want to pay for kind of streaming services, so I did the one thing that Will Green will spit at, which I tried Plex to start with. Which is obviously you can have all your music on a media server at home, install the MyPlex app, the media server on your machine. You can stream all via the MyPlex app on iPhones and things. You can stream all your media from home. That was great, but the port forwarding didn't always work and it always crapped out. So I kind of gave up on that. Then I tried Google Play Music, because you can upload up to 20,000 tracks for free. And I gave that a go. It was all right. It's not like iTunes Match, because I think iTunes Match matches the songs that you upload for high quality. Google Play Music, there's 20,000 free tracks. It uploads them at the quality that you acquired the match, should we say.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that great. And then this month, Spotify are doing a deal where they're doing 3 months for the price of one. So you pay a tenner and you get 3 months, and I paid the 10 quid thinking I'll do it for 3 months to see how it is. I couldn't live without Spotify again, especially on iPhone and iPad. I've tried Audio as well. I tried the trials on there, but Spotify is head and shoulders above anyone else. The app's great. The interaction's great. The offline file sync is fantastic. Yeah. It is a lot of money. I think £10 a month, because I probably wasn't even spending £10 a month on buying albums. But after trying all the free alternatives, when my subscription runs out in September, I probably will end up paying £10 a month for Spotify, because it is just that seamless.
I've got Nokia 1020, and that's got a free Nokia music service on it. It's pretty good, but I don't use it because I don't listen to a lot of music. I listen to Planet Rock in the radio, and that's about it, really, or its podcast. So. And Pete in the chat room's just got a Nokia 1020, and now he's turned into a Nokia 1020 devotee.
Yeah. Do you think Apple are missing out on not releasing iTunes Radio like worldwide as quick as they could have done? Because we're nearly kind of a year on, I don't know, 9 months on, they're so far behind that things like Spotify are still clearing up, aren't they? I don't think it's going to destroy it.
I think that might indicate a reluctance on the part of the music industry, not more than Apple.
Yeah, because they've also announced this week now that Spotify streaming is going to be part of the charts now as well. So it just shows how powerful it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're talking about it. I think it was it 300 plays is equivalent to one purchase or something, isn't it? How are they going to work that out?
Yeah.
I've tried all the free alternatives. You can do it, but it's just so unsatisfactory. You should kind of think, oh, it could be better, but... You know, I've got my Spotify, because I've got them on three with the one plan. I've got the sound quality whacked up to extreme and it sounds brilliant. You can just listen to anything, anywhere. You know, if you just really want a kind of seamless experience, and Spotify is the way to go. But, you know, Google Music, if you want to upload the 20,000 tracks and give that a go, you know, it's not going to cost you anything. So give it a try. Plex is all right, but it's a bit more kind of fudging around. So it's whether you want to pay the money or not.
I think the other one we haven't mentioned that it's probably worth a mention is Last.fm.
Last.fm, I listened to that quite a lot and it was always very good.
Yeah, because you can pick the genre and it will pick it based on your
taste. You can do artists as well, can't you? And they'll give you various renditions around the artist.
Yeah, so, I don't use it, but I've heard good things about it. So, and it does tend to be... for variety, whereas, you know, the thing I find with Spotify, it's probably that I'm not using it properly, but it shows how little I use it, is that a lot of the time you have to say what it is you want to listen to.
I got I bought a whole I think it was Match 20, is it? Is that the band, Match 20?
Matchbooks 20.
Matchbooks 20. And I bought, they came up on a search, I was listening to a piece of music, it might have been a Maroon 5 track, and they came up as an alternate option. And I heard one track off them, and I went on iTunes, did a little play down on them, bought all their albums. So it definitely worked.
Yep.
Dear Help Show, this is from Jazz. Hold
on. Do you not care what me and Shad do?
You had your chance. Go on, sorry.
we were waiting patiently. You were going around the panel.
Sorry, mate. What do you got?
I use Spotify, but I have tried iTunes, Match, Bloom, and a variety of other ones. I'm the same. I kind of go to Spotify. Bloom's all right. It's a British company as well, so I kind of felt like supporting the British organization. It's okay. You basically kind of say, I like these selection of tracks or artists and things like that, and it kind of tries to throw together a radio station for you. It's kind of okay. It's not great. There's no offline features and things like that. iTunes Match, I paid for it to begin with. I think I'm still paying for it, but I don't use it at all. And it's mainly because I kept finding whenever I wanted to use or listen to some of the songs, for some random reason, my phone had decided to delete them all. And I had to re-download them. And if I want to listen to a song, I don't want to wait, you know, 5 minutes for it to download the track or something like that. Mm. And then at the end of that track, it then pauses and waits and tries to download the next one. I use Spotify, but I use mainly the radio features and the ability to thumb up and thumb down things. So that kind of learns what you do better. And I found some awesome music and some new artists that I'd never even heard of before that now have kind of made their way into my regular listening schedule with Spotify. The only thing is I need Spotify to have a family package or something like that. Because at the moment I'm spending 30 quid a month on Spotify because we need three separate accounts in my house. Just because of the way that we all listen to music. Kirsty listens to music, my teenage daughter listens to music, and I do. And we've tried to share accounts, and it just frustrates us all because somebody wants to listen to music at the same time as somebody else, and it detects it, and it kicks us off. Mm. And so I'm already paying 30 quid for Spotify, and I kind of feel that they should give me some kind of family package where I pay slightly less than that, but I can have up to four folk using it or something like that. But it's ridiculous the amount of money that it's charging me.
Shads, what have you got?
Actually, I've tried a few different ones, and iTunes Radio is good, except that you obviously you can't go and specifically ask for a specific track from a specific artist. So you have to say what genre you like, or if you can specify an artist name, and then it will go and find all the music that's similar to that. So it's good for that. But if you want to find a specific track, then I go with Spotify. And Spotify now has a number of partners. For example, the DJ2 app on the iPad now works with Spotify.
Good.
So that's really cool. And the other day I wanted to listen to a track that I was thinking, oh, I want to listen to that again. I've heard it for years from Pink Floyd on Amagama, which is the several species of small furry animals and a Pict. So, yeah, I found it on Spotify.
Excellent. Good one. Next question is from Rachel. I recently bought an Apple Mac laptop and plugged in a mouse, but the scroller on my mouse is going the wrong way. My closest Apple shop is 2 hours away, so I wanted to check with you guys before I make a trip. Is it my Apple Mac need replacing? No.
No.
You need replacing, Rachel.
Oh, that's unfair. No, that's, not that's everybody's geniuses.
Okay, so you know what that is, though, right?
Yeah. So basically, Apple decided to change everything that you'd done with a mouse for the previous 30 years about 3 years ago. So it scrolls. I got to say, I prefer it now.
It's called natural scrolling.
Natural scrolling, yeah. So it up is up, down is down.
As if you're using it on a touch device.
Yeah.
So you go into system preferences and you click on mouse, and there's a little ticky box at the top that says scroll direction natural. And if you want to go back to the old way, you just untick that.
Okay. Please don't write a letter of complaint, Sarah. Rachel, I didn't mean it.
And also, I just want to point out, Sarah, you're not 2 hours away from an Apple store if you're in Gateshead, because there's one in the Metro Centre. So I just changed your life. You're welcome.
as well as Rachel's.
Yeah.
thank you. Sean MacArthur in Dumfries. I grew up in Dumfries. Truckway Road. There we go. Where do I start with Hackintosh? Ewan, I've heard you say on some shows that you've got a Hackintosh. I'd love to have a Mac, but the price tag is too high. So I started looking at Hackintosh, and it's a minefield. I don't have a Hackintosh. I don't know why people keep saying this. I'm comfortable building PCs. I built a couple in the late 90s, but I haven't had a need since then. Guessing it hasn't changed much. Is there a website that lists all the hardware I should buy? Sean MacArthur in MacArthur and Dumfries. It's Tony386.mac. Is it, or Tony386mac.com or whatever it is. Just put Tony386. That's it, yeah. TonyMac86, and he's got a complete list. The one thing I would say is get a simple case. Don't get a complicated case. And then get yourself all the kit that's on his lists. It's all available. It used to just be all Newegg stuff, so you had to really hunt around to try and find it. But now he gives you a link to Newegg and to Amazon in every country in the local area. So you get France, you get Germany, you get UK, and you get America. So it's dead easy to find the kit. Buy the exact kit, he says, though. Don't get clever. Don't buy something that's not on the list, because you'll end up getting shagged rotten by it, which I might have done. even then, brace yourself for something not working. And if you can, get an Ethernet and a motherboard that's got a motherboard that's got a recognized Ethernet port and a recognized graphic card in it, as well as a base level, before you start adding in an extra card for extra graphics power, because that's where it can go really belly up. And that's what happened with mine. First time around, I did the graphics card worked beautifully. Second time around in the new motherboard, not a chance. So fortunately, I've got 1 gig in the card already there. So it's easy.
There's a company called Quo as well. Quo,
right.
Quo computer.com, and they do a motherboard, which is actually it's made by Gigabyte. Is that the company?
Yeah, they're making boards.
They make a motherboard, and this company actually uses the Gigabyte motherboards, but with their own brain's gone dead. Sorry,
it's all right, mate. We'll come back to you.
You sleepless nights.
It's all right. You got a new board.
They use their own software on the motherboard, and it works pretty well. From what I've read, I don't actually have one myself. And the boards are not that expensive, $229. It's worth looking into that as well.
I mean, Bronwyn's putting a thing here about grub issues with five Linux machines and Windows OSs, but rather than build a Hackintosh, it's no harder to build a Hackintosh than it is to build a PC, plain and simple. So it's a piece of cake. It's easier, perhaps, in fact, because you haven't got to deal with Windows licensing. Wankers.
Yes.
Next question is from Adul Mohamed. Sorry, Adul. in Amsterdam, Ohio. Sometimes my Mac won't turn on if it's plugged into my cinema display. It just hangs at the white screen before the ding sound. If I unplug the cinema display, it starts up fine and works fine. But if I plug it back in once logged in, what's causing that? Adul Mohamed, Amsterdam, Ohio.
So I think the first thing that needs to be double checked is what have you got hanging off the back of your Thunderbolt display? And unplug them and test and see if it still works.
I'd have said drives. Drives is the worst one, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So
it says cinema display, so it's probably an old model, right?
I still call mine a cinema display, though. No, I still call mine a cinema display, even though it's not, I suppose. So kind of colloquialism, I guess.
Is that likely to be through Thunderbird to VGA or something, or HDMI or something like that?
No, because Thunderbird's a go.
Yeah, it just goes straight. It goes straight Thunderbolt into the back of the machine. But that's a fair point, Zara. It could be. No, well, would you say it was a cinema display if you had just a 27-inch, like I don't know, HP monitor and going through a Thunderbolt connector, like a Thunderbolt adapter?
I would have said. I would have pounced on the fact that if he's got a cinema display, if he's got the LG panel in that, it's probably still working, but it's creaking heavily. If he's got the new Thunderbolt monitors, I'd still have called that a cinema display myself. But.
Sure, yeah. Well, still, the same sort of applies, but as long as you're going through a Thunderbolt port, if you've got stuff hanging off the back of the cinema display, start by unplugging that, then see if the problem persists. If it does, then it's probably the Thunderbolt display or the Thunderbolt port, and I would say that's a trip to your Apple store. If it doesn't, start plugging things in just one at a time and see when the problem reappears. And chances are one of those things will be causing the problem. And as Ewan rightly says, if you've got a hard drive plugged into there, I'd be willing to say that that is almost definitely your problem. Basically, the solution to that, I guess, is to try and replace the cable because it could be a cable problem. It could be the port in the actual cinema display.
The Thunderbolt seems to want to fight with the MacBook Pro for startup. It seems to think it's the startup drive for some reason. I don't know why it does it because it doesn't seem logical to me that it should. But go ahead, Sarah.
I was just going to say, I mean, as well as the fact there might be a problem, could it just be a device conflict of some description?
It is, but it's not in the same way as a Windows device conflict where you get a blue screen of death or something. It's there's something in the in the Thunderbolt display, and maybe it's something that's built in with Thunderbolt where it's looking for a device startup disk. It's not a conflict as such. It's like the cinema display wants to take over starting up the Mac, and I don't know why.
Okay.
Because if I take my Thunderbolt 6 terabyte drive here, and I plug it straight in, and I start my Mac up. Even with FireWire stuff and the Thunderbolt disk in, it starts up just fine. But then the Thunderbolt disk, if I plug it in the back of the display, it sits and fights to start up, so I have to plug it in afterwards. So.
Strange. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's there's something in there where it fights for the start. It's almost certainly, if it's a Thunderbolt display, I guarantee you've got a drive in it. FireWire drives are the worst as well for that. It's not necessarily Thunderbolt drives. FireWire drives are horrible as well for it. Take it out, plug it into the computer. The port's on the back of the Thunderbolt display. Waste of time, really. But get a Samsung or something like that. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say that we use Thunderbolt displays in the office, and most of the guys have two of them hanging off MacBook Pros, and we've not had those issues, even with drives plugged into the back.
FireWire, the ones that it always fell over with mine, not so much with the Thunderbolt anymore, but the Fire ones are awful. In the back of there. Next question from Grant in Indiana. I want to start recording my Xbox Call of Duty games, voice-overing them and sticking them on YouTube. Watch out for that. I've got a Windows 7 PC. Do you know if there's a way to take the HDMI cable from Xbox 360 into the PC, recording the output? Ideally, I could then take the HDMI out of the PC and into my TV to see what I'm playing instead of playing in a window on my PC. Is this even possible? I have no idea. I was lost halfway through that. I see people on YouTube doing it already, so there must be a way. Grant.
Yeah, so there's a few different alternatives here, ranging from a bit kludgy and cheap all the way through to spending, you know, 100 quid. The cheap and nasty way of doing it is basically get yourself a Twitch account and some kind of screen recording software like Camtasia or something like that, and stream to your Twitch account. if you're into Call of Duty and things like that, I'm assuming you know what a Twitch account is, but stream up to that, make it full screen, and then screen record it. You need a fairly decent internet connection. My internet connection would not do this well. But because you're basically streaming up to the Twitch servers.
Dude, your internet connection doesn't do Skype well.
Yeah, exactly. so that's the cheap man's way of doing it, but it works if you've got a decent internet connection. If you want to kind of do it a little bit more serious, so like the guys at like GameSpot and things like that, what they do, you can get a variety of different things. You can get like a HDMI in card for your PC. They range anything from about kind of, I did a search on Amazon earlier on. I'll just open the tab up. Should have done that beforehand. They're ranging from like 40 quid up to, you know, 100, 110 pounds for the card, for cards to go on your PC. It goes in the PCI Express port by the looks of things. The other things is you can get things that actually sit in between them. I've never actually worked out what this company pronounces their names. It's Hupapauge. H-A-U-P-P-A-U-G-E. Hupapauge.
Hupapauge.
Hupage. Yeah, sorry, Hupage. I didn't have my teeth in there. Hupage. They basically give you the throughput of the HDMI. And I've never actually tried these, but I'm assuming, I haven't looked into these in the past, but record stuff for the Gamer Show. It sort of, the HDMI goes in, then it comes back out and goes to your telly. And then there's I believe it's like a FireWire 800 or something like that that comes out the back of these and then goes into your PC or Mac, as it happens, and allows you, they kind of start about the 100 quid mark. But keep your eyes open, because a couple of times I've seen them on like Amazon deals for like kind of 60, 70 quid. But they're worthwhile for that. And then you just use any old recording software. So like Windows Movie Maker probably do the job on a PC, or something like iMovie or something like that on a Mac would allow you to do that.
Okay, excellent.
There's a small caveat I would attach to that. I've used the whole Parish cards and they're really good, but stay away from the USB ones because they can't handle the video.
Yeah,
through
it's not
the,
Yeah.
I mean, Paul,
actually, there's the intensity shuttle from Blackmagic can do that as well.
Well, I've got Paul's recommendation. I have a Blackmagic card in the Hackintosh, which works just fine and is brilliant for HDMI. Superb, Paul. Thank you.
The other thing to mention is, and I know this, I forgot the chap's name, Grant, I think it was.
Grant, yeah.
Grant was asking about Call of Duty and specifically the Xbox 360, but Nintendo are now taking a cut of any revenue you're making on YouTube. I don't know if that's actually in action yet, but they plan to start taking a cut. So if you are plugging your Wii U through this and recording stuff like that, just be aware of that if you're taking any advertising.
I thought you were going to say they were going to take Call of Duty cut.
No. Well, to be fair, you can get Call of Duty on the Wii, so it's possible. But yeah. It's if you're using any Nintendo IP, which I suppose Call of Duty isn't actually, any Nintendo IP. So if you're like doing a voiceover in Mario Kart 8 or something like that, Nintendo plans to, and I don't know whether they've actually started this yet or not, to take a cut of any advertising revenue you're making off of those videos.
Bastards!
Also, PS4 and the Xbox One can also do this natively.
Xbox One records, doesn't it? It does screen record. But it doesn't get viewing it.
Yeah.
No, you can do voiceover though.
You do voice. Yeah, you're right.
Chris in Chester. Dear Help Show, I've got an iPhone, but all of my computers are PCs. I'd really like to take advantage of AirPlay with streaming music to them, a bit like Sonos, but will it only work on Apple devices? No idea.
You can do it.
Oh, come on, righty. Enlighten us.
You can do it. Well, there's two ways you can do it, because I've done it at home here. There's a free way. Well, because he's saying about streaming audio. But there's a paid service called Air Server, which will do, you can install it on your PC, and you can stream audio and video. That does have a subscription service, and I think, it's pretty pricey, actually. It's about $15 a month, and they're mainly aiming at the education market. But there is an app called SharePort 4W. I'll put it in the chat room. It's an app you install on your PC if you've got a media center plugged into a hi-fi system or whatever, kind of that sort of thing. You can run it on startup. It's literally a little executable, but it basically turns your PC into an AirPort receiver. So you can have your music playing on your iPhone, and obviously you hit the AirPort button, and your PC will then turn up as something you can AirPlay to. And not only can you send audio to it, but on the screen of your PC, it will actually come up with the album art and the tracks that you're playing.
Nice.
And it's absolutely free. And I've tried that, and I've actually got like three or four really little micro PCs around the house. No monitors or anything. It's running 24/7 with the SharePort thing running. You can literally go into any room with an iOS device playing music, and it'll literally, you can just like, it's almost like a Sonos really, where you can kind of just go, I'm in this room, I'll go here, I'll go there, and it's absolutely free. And it's SourceForge, so it's open source, so it's absolutely brilliant. And it works seamlessly. I've tried some of the open source video things, and they don't work really well, but if you're just looking through a stream video, then it's absolutely a brilliant little free app. And it's something like 200K or something like that. It's absolutely ridiculous, but well worth giving it a go.
Good, man. Thank you.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, definitely. Bronny has corrected us all in the chat room. Apparently, the company is based in Long Island, and the place is pronounced Horporg.
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 German.
Hawpawg. I don't know, but I'm going on what she's...
That's what I thought.
I thought it was German, and I thought it was Hawpawg, but she's saying it's Horporg. It's a town in Long Island. I'll go with that.
Okay.
You say Hawpawg.
Not a place in Discworld.
Is it? Oh, maybe.
I thought Horporg was in Discworld. No.
Last question. I've actually got something to add to this one. Because I built a Hackintosh. I know a little bit about what's gone on here, but Sarah's the Linux girl. Dear Help Show, hello, I'm relatively new to Linux. I have a working version of Mint 13 on an external hard drive, but decided to try installing the newest Mint distro on my laptop. For some reasons, the network is not functioning for either wired or wireless. Not sure what screwed up where, but I ran the wireless setup script to post here. Any help you've got would be welcome. And I've got no intention of reading out the script to you in the slightest.
Oh, please, go on.
03:01.3 system peripheral bracket or parenthesis 0880 parenthesis : Rico Co Limited XD picture card controller, and it goes on and on. I don't know why I posted it in the document, but there we go.
I'm glad you did, because it gave me some clues.
Oh right, okay. I know this might be a big ask, but any help would be great, as it's starting to really piss me off. Thanks, Thomas Keane in Glasgow. Right, Sarah, give us it.
Right. Firstly, Thomas, I apologise if I'm suggesting anything that you've already tried, but these are the steps that I would have taken. The clue is in the last part that you actually sent, in that all that stuff that Ewan was starting to read out, which was the ifconfig, which is clearly missing an important part, which is the Ethernet definition, normally ETH0. So I would do in this situation is you need to find out whether it's the external hard drive that might be causing the issue in terms of the install. So I would do is if you've installed it from an ISO, or even better, from a distro disk, live boot it and then see what happens. And then drop into a terminal window and use the ifconfig command to see if it then sees the. If there is an Ethernet port while it's actually live booting, if it's actually showing that, then I would try installing it on a USB stick and use that to eliminate whether it might be the hard disk. Because if you then install it on, if you're booting off the USB stick and you can see it, then you know there's a problem with the install on the hard drive. But ultimately, I think what you're probably going to have to try doing is probably try and reinstall it, because if you start seeing it all, all the different ways you install it and look at it, you can see the Ethernet definition. Then it says to me that there's something, as you say, something went wrong with the install. So I think you're probably going to have to start doing it. You'll have to do it again, and if you can't get it to work, then I think you're probably going to have to look at maybe dual booting if you've got another operating system on there, because for some reason it doesn't want to see. You don't say in the email what laptop you've actually got, so can't say. I mean, I can't imagine it would be a problem, but installing it on an external hard drive is not something I would do. If it's connected via USB, then yeah, it's not exactly going to be the greatest for a boot disk. So I think that's probably what you might need to try. That helps.
I'm going for my gold star this evening.
Go on.
Because the only word in all of that script that I actually understand is the word Broadcom Corporation. And the only reason I know that is because I had a Broadcom card in the Hackintosh first time I built it, and I couldn't get any Ethernet access whatsoever. And it was the Broadcom driver. There was no driver to run the card.
I did say in my notes that it's possible it could be the driver.
Yeah.
But I think that's you need to eliminate all that. Like we said before on when we were talking about the cinema display, is you need to eliminate other possibilities before you start looking at. And if everything else works, especially when you live boot it, then
the solution
know,
I got
could be the external hard drive.
I don't know how this relates to Linux, but the solution I got off a forum on the Tony Mac thing was delete the card, let it restart, and then change the plist file and restart. And the plist file, you had one line to get rid of, and it worked then after that. So,
okay.
I don't. They said it was a driver issue, and the driver issue wouldn't work with the Broadcom card. So, I mean, I can't believe that Linux is probably pretty good for drivers now.
Yeah, I mean, I've not really encountered any issues, even in really old laptops when I've used installed various, whether it's Ubuntu or Mint or whatever. They do tend to be fairly... You know,
does each distro have its? You take your life in your hands with each distro of Linux, or is it that are they all sharing common drivers?
Well, a lot of them share because a lot of it's like when we were talking about the Raspberry Pi, and I was saying that the main distro, the main Linux distro for that is Raspbian, which is based on Debian, and like Ubuntu and Mint are all based on Debian. And then there's Red Hat, and there's other ones as well, which are based on a different core. So the drivers tend to go with the cores. So if you're using Debian, pretty much a driver should work with Ubuntu. It should work with Mint. It should work with anything that is built on the Debian build.
Excellent. Good answer. Glad I chipped in a little anyway. I am completely shot. I'm absolutely knackered from having to remember that bit. Windrider's chipped in. He's gone to Wikipedia, the source of all knowledge, and says the company's named after the hamlet of Hauppauge, New York, in which it is based. So, Bronwyn, top marks for you. Gold star, missus. I think that's it for questions. Is that the last
one? That's quite a lot.
That'll do.
That was a good one.
Yeah, it was.
I've also remembered it's Ankh-Morpork. The Discworld's based.
All right, okay.
Or there's a type of Discworld. I knew it was similar. But.
Excellent. The Bash is coming up. It's not long to go now, a couple of weeks, and we'll all be sitting drinking beer in the Kismet Curry House or beer in the garden at Water Orton, and it'll be fantastic. If you'd like to come, it's £10 deposit for the curry. Get your curry now. There is only a couple of spaces left, so get yourself in there. And July 12th, the day after, is the Bash. £25 for adults. All kids under 16 are free of charge, and you'll get everything you can eat or drink for the day, including in your price. The hall was £400 to hire for the day, so it's all just fun. We'll have a great time. Don't worry about it. It should be wonderful and dandy and smashing, and everyone's coming, and it'll be great. We've got the World Card Cutting Championships. We've got loads of garden games. We've got the Space Hoppers. Aaron Clayton's bringing the Space Hoppers because he's going for the curry, even though he can't stay on the day of the Bash because he's got a wedding to go to. So it should be absolutely excellent. Bring the kids. Have loads of fun. It's a family day. It's not a techie geekery day. It's just a pile of fun and relaxation and chatting with people that are really wonderful, really wonderful. Please support it. They're absolutely brilliant. And the other people talk about, we're on a help show. Well, if you need help with your broadband, is the Network Union. If you work in an IT company that need help with BT, MPLS, WAN, SIP, Ethernet connectivity, all that kind of stuff, whether you've got an existing connection with BT or whether you want to start a fresh one, then you can get Network Union involved to help you. The client relationship is still between you and BT. What happens is you get an extra layer of service that fits in with the Network Union. They'll help you deal with all your contractual management with BT, help you sort it out, make sure your service is accurate and that kind of stuff. And it goes all the way down. If you're a small SME, it doesn't make any difference. As long as you've got a BT broadband service for business, the Network Union can help you. They've got tons of stuff. There's packages and there's upgrades that they can offer for you as well. And they'll help you with your WAN system, and everything will be singing and dancing. Don't talk to me because I know nothing. I've shown that this evening. Go and talk to the Network Union. They're brilliant. Give them your email address, and all they do is contact you back to find out what it is you want and if they can help you. And then they never contact you again if you don't want them to. They don't keep it for marketing. They don't sell your email on to someone else. That's very important to us because we don't want them badgering you. And I've got to say, Robert's absolutely fab, and he's based in the same neck of the woods as Righty. So... He can't be he all
is,
bad.
He is.
Boys from Norwich. Boys together.
All right.
So check out the Network Union. Go to britishnetwork.com/sponsors and see if they can help you. If they can, they can. If they can't, they can't. But they'll let you give you an honest opinion. They're really nice people as well. I've got on thoroughly well with them. Wonderful. And I've put Robert onto my account, and my account was like, he's a good bloke. So there you go. See, it's true. Right. Have we got any cool tips? Not cool things. We don't give out things on this show. We give out tips, sound advice that will get you from A to B. Wheaters, do you want to start us off?
Okay. So this is something I discovered that I didn't even know was there. In my attempt to try and discover what was wrong with my Airport Extreme. And basically what it is it's some quite cool wireless diagnostic features that are part of OS X. And basically what you could do on OS 10, I'll get in trouble for saying X again. As long as Wi-Fi is enabled, you just hold down the Alt key and click on the wireless. And then you get open wireless diagnostics, which is a menu option that isn't previously there. It lets you put in your password because it's one of these kind of features that OS X thinks is quite important and you shouldn't do without any kind of problems or with any without having the password and things like that. You'll then get a thing that comes up and says wireless diagnostics. You kind of want to ignore that because that's not the bit you're interested in. The funny thing is, on my Mac, or both of my Macs, the utilities screen is actually hidden by default. So you have to go up to, quite unintuitively, go up to View, and then you choose Hide Utilities Toolbar, which then makes a box appear, bizarrely, even though you said Hide. And then you go back to Hide Show Utilities Toolbar, and then a toolbar actually appears within that utilities box.
Of course.
You click on Wi-Fi Scan, and then a button down the bottom right corner that says Scan Now. And what that'll do is it scans you, just your network, just blasts out over your network and to see what other wireless networks are in the vicinity. So it'll bring up all your neighbors and everything like that. And in my scenario, it picked up only the 5 gigahertz network coming out of my Airport Extreme. It tells you how many 2.4 gigahertz networks are in the area, how many 5 gigahertz networks. And most importantly, it tells you what it feels based on the other networks around you, what the best channel your 2.4 gigahertz network should be on and the best channel your 5 gigahertz network should be on. And there's lots of other cool stuff in there, but it's something that's kind of hidden. And I think it's pretty awesome. It just, because it's always been something that I've always found it as a bit of a black magic. My networking friends always went, never use auto, always set a channel. And I was like, well, do you just randomly choose a channel? How does that work? Do you choose a channel? And then if it's not working a day later, you choose a different channel. Was never sure. And this appears to quite clearly say, well, this is the best one for you. And it normally gives you kind of two or three options if it thinks there's a few that could actually be available through to you. So I thought that was quite cool.
Excellent. Good one. Like that a lot. Shads, what have you got for us, mate?
Sadly, my tip is actually one of the answers that we gave earlier.
That's all right. Reiterate.
It's actually the timed access control and the Apple Airport devices. So allowing you to set up times that certain devices on your network can have access to. And not just your iOS or Apple devices, but also other devices. So all you need to know is the MAC address to put in there. So, for example, if you want to say that your Xbox can only be on the internet for certain times of the day, you can also do it with that.
Excellent. I that was a really good tip, though, mate. It's well worth reiterating because there's a lot of parents out there need support for that kind of stuff. Definitely. Sarah, what have you got for us?
Mine is just something to remember. We all know about, and I'm sure a lot of people use VLC as the ultimate thing for watching.
Can't recommend it highly enough.
Exactly. But one of the things that I think it tends to get forgotten about is using it for watching or listening to streams of radio stations or whatever, if they're available on the net. I just think it was worth highlighting the fact that it's not just for watching movies and DVDs and things like that. You can actually use it for plenty of other things as well.
Excellent. VLC is brilliant. I use it regularly. I mean, I'd be lost. I put caffeine on, I put Alfred app on, and the next thing I fit on the computer is always VLC.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to a lot of internet radio, and very often you can find out what the stream is, and I find it a much easier way of actually listening to, particularly on my PC, because you can set up desktop things with VLC space and the stream, and it will just go to it when you actually open it, which is great. Even on Linux, it works great.
Excellent. Righty, what do you have for us, mate? You're on mute, boy.
I am. Obviously, not everyone's an avid Windows 8, and we get a lot of calls to kind of un-Windows 8 a lot of a lot of laptops. So the fair thing people ask us to do is to bring the start menu back. So we always install Classic Shell, which I've talked about before, which bring the start menu back. That's great. But when they're using the desktop, because people want to boot into desktop, they always get those side charms and it always kind of tries to get back in the start menu. But people have asked this recently and I find it the way to turn them off. So when you go to the top left of the screen, they always swipe in, it's for networking settings. If you go into control panel and then go into devices tab and your mouse, so go into mouse and the devices tab, there's actually a setting in there that tells you to enable or disable the side swipe or enable sides edge swipe, should I say. And if you do that and install Classic Shell, you basically get the classic Windows 7 experience without the kind of Windows 8 thing kind of interrupting. That's probably better for people who haven't got a touchscreen laptop, because you probably want to keep it if you've got a touchscreen laptop. But for people who haven't, it's probably best turning those off if you want their classic desktop experience.
People will be sending you cider through the post for that tip, boy. Definitely. That's how much Windows 8 Metro interface is reviled from my experience.
They hate it.
I think it's all right, but there you go. Good tip, mate. Good tip. That'll be widely hailed. My cool tip is dead simple. Let me get the old control for the camera here and wind this forwards. So I'm holding up a power brick for an Apple laptop while Sarah types.
Sorry.
That's all right, mate.
I'm trying to put it on mute and I forgot.
Can we buy a quieter keyboard for Sarah out of the
Patreon funds? Yeah, I need one.
So, quick and easy way to fold this up. Lift your ears up on the thing and hold the thin cord out of the way. Then wrap alternately the big cable in between the ears, not round the ears, in between the ears. Okay, there we go. Oh. This was supposed to be quicker than this. I do it really quickly when I'm late for a train, I promise you. There we go. Okay, so now I've got that with me plug pointing down and just dangling free. Then you take the small one and you wrap it around the ears like you would normally. And what that does is it traps the large cable under the small cable. And then you finish the small cable off with a little clip as normal. And it doesn't come undone in your bag. Double wrap. There you go. I've done that on the Mac show before, but I thought that was a really cool tip. And I was struggling for something to do that was original. So there you go. The double wrap. It will change your frickin' life. I promise you.
That's how I do mine.
The double wrap.
Now, if people are listening in audio and they're sat there with cable all around their head. No, right.
And I've got an old beetroot on the feed. It does that. I don't know why it does that. As soon as I get anywhere near that camera, it just suddenly goes, and I turn into a blotchy beetroot. We'll sort it. We'll get more light. We're fine. Right then, where can we get a hold of you, Wheaters?
You can get me at Paul Wheatley on Twitter, and you can find me on the Pocket Show and the Gamer Show on this here fine network.
Pocket Show up just recently.
I just went up last night. Yeah, it was a good one this week. Finally, after 10 episodes, we finally had a bit of a heated debate over iOS versus Windows.
They punch up there.
It was very close. It wasn't quite there. I've been kind of hoping for just a little bit of aggro, just a bit of entertainment and stuff, and we finally got it last night.
That's because you haven't had me and
Alison. It was
very
respectful and nice, though, but it was nevertheless a little bit heated.
You need me and Alison on the same episode, then you get what you want.
I don't think I could deal with that. We'll maybe leave that a little while.
Shads, where are you, sir?
Paul Shadwell. At Paul Shadwell. PaulShadwell on Twitter. And you can also find me at about.me/Paul Shadwell.
Excellent, mate. Sarah, where are you, Mrs.?
I'm on the Twitters at Sarah Jane K, and on other shows, including The Big Show on this network.
Excellent, Mrs. Thank you very much. And lastly, but by no means least, Righty Boy.
Mate, you'll find me at Paul and on Twitter, here on The Big Show, and tomorrow at the Royal Narfolk Show.
What are you doing there? They're not selling
like,
you, are they?
It's like a dodgy market with tractors.
Ah, cool. I bet you'll be really excited. Ooh.
I am. I'm ready to go.
Oh, mate, can't sleep tonight. Jolly good. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. Don't forget, if you'd like to donate and support the network, you can go to patreon.com/British Tech Network and give us a wee donation of anything you can afford. $5, $10, $1. Doesn't matter. Anything you give will go back to making the studio look better and dragging us out of our amateurish ways. But we'll always stay true at heart. We'll always be crap underneath. Don't worry about it. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. I've already said that, but now I'm going because I'm tired. See you in the morning. Bye.